This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's become a Fresh Air tradition to devote the week leading into Labor Day to a theme. This time, we've chosen country music. We'll be hearing from great songwriters who've written about falling in love, falling out of love, jealousy, despair, and of course, drinking. And we'll hear from great singers who have channeled these emotions. We'll feature interviews from our archive with Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, George Jones, Charlie Rich, Doc Watson, Waylon Jennings, and more. We'll start with some classic songs performed in our studio by Jimmy Dale Gilmore back in 2005. His voice would make even Hank Williams cry, wrote Nicholas Davidoff in the New York Times Magazine. Gilmore is a singer from West Texas who writes songs that would be described as alternative country. But he sang country classics on his 2005 CD, Come On Back, which he dedicated to his father, who had died 5 years earlier of ALS. Come On Back features songs his father loved, including one by Jimmy Rogers, who Jimmy Dale Gilmore was named after. Gilmore brought his guitar to our studio and also brought along guitarist Robbie Gerso, who performed on the CD. Later in the show, Gilmore's son Colin joins them with some vocal harmonies. Welcome, everyone, to Fresh Air. It's really a pleasure to have you here. Jimmy Dale Gilmore, this new CD is dedicated to your father, who died a few years ago. I want you to start with a song, Pick Me Up On Your Way Down. And what did this song mean to your dad?
Well, actually, it represents an entire style that I really associate with him. It's this old, it's honky-tonk dance music is what it amounts to. And it is one particular one that he really loved. I have this memory of him just, with his kind of head tossed back and with his eyes closed, just grinning when this kind of music was on.
Would you play it for us?
Yeah.
One, two, a one, two.
You were mine for just a while. Now you're putting on the style. And you never once look back at your home across the track. You're the gossip of the town. But my heart can still be found where you tossed it on the ground. Pick me up on your way down. Pick me up on your way down when you're blue and all alone. When their glamour starts to bore you, come on back where you belong. You may be their pride and joy, but they'll find another toy. And they'll take away your crown. Pick me up on your way down. That's the way we fake being the band playing the song.
And that's Jimmy Dale Gilmore on guitar and singing Robbie Gerso, who's singing harmonies and playing guitar. And that song is from Jimmy Dale Gilmore's new CD, Come On Back. That sounded really great. As we mentioned before, the CD is dedicated to your father, who died of Lou Gehrig's disease. Did he introduce you to country music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. He was, from my very, very earliest memories, that music was always pervasive. You know, it was radio. We didn't have a phonograph until I was actually in high school.
Wow, that's pretty late.
And we always had the radio going, you know, and my dad played. So he would be sitting around the house playing his guitar along with the radio or actually, you know, sometimes playing that with bands for dances.
And you quote a great advertisement for a dance that he was playing. Apparently he was one of the first musicians in West Texas to use a solid body electric guitar.
That's right.
Would you describe that ad?
Yeah, it said, at this time, when I was very small, we lived in Tulia, Texas, from the time until I was about 5 years old, and on a dairy farm. And my mom recently, you know, a few years ago, found a little clipping from the Tulia Herald, little tiny ad that said, dance at the VFW Hall featuring with the Swingaroos featuring Brian Gilmore and his electric guitar.
That's great. So did your father teach you guitar or did you learn that on your own?
He taught me just a little bit. He taught me how to play Wildwood Flower. The thing is that I fell in love with the acoustic guitar and my dad was an electric player. Mm-hmm. And I never did, to my regret now, I never did really learn to play the electric well. My dad taught me a tiny amount, and then I kind of went off into really more in the folk and blues direction as I was learning to play.
How did you start singing?
I can't remember when I didn't sing. That was just, I even think in a way that I might have been, even though I thought about other things, I think I maybe was already predetermined to be a musician. Singing and music was so deeply important to me, and I think it came from my dad a lot.
I want you to do another song from your new CD, Come On Back, and the song I'm going to ask you to play is a Johnny Cash song called Train of Love. But tell us first how you first heard Johnny Cash and what he meant to you.
Well, I may have heard a few of his recordings on the radio a little bit. This is when I was very young. But my first real memory of it was my dad took my sister and I to see Johnny Cash with Elvis Presley. And I was about 12. I think she was about 10. I suspect that night completely determined the rest of my... I think that was one of those places where a little deflection happened. I loved that music so much. I loved both of them. My sister has this memory, and I think her memory is better than mine, but she remembers talking on the way home from the thing that night that she loved Elvis the most and that I loved Johnny Cash. The way I remembered is that I loved both of them so much that it was just the best music I'd ever heard in the world, and I already loved music.
Although you sing in a completely different range than Johnny Cash does, there's something about Johnny Cash that I hear in your voice.
I think he probably affected my way of understanding phrases, and he affected me so much from such an early time that I'm pretty sure it's not deliberate, but it's in there, it's for sure.
Boy, I wish I was at that concert. It must have been really early in their career, right after they both signed with Sun Records. At that concert with Presley and Cash. Wow. Well, would you do that song for us, Train of Love?
Yeah, I will. Train of love's a-coming, big black wheels a-humming, sweethearts waiting at the station, happy hearts are drumming. Oh, train men, tell me maybe, ain't you got my baby? Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Train of love's a-leaving, leaving my heart grieving, but early and late I sit and wait because I'm still believing. Oh, we'll walk away together, though I might wait forever. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home.
That's singer and guitarist Jimmy Dale Gilmore, accompanied by guitarist Robbie Gerso, performing in our studio. Jimmy, your father died of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, in, what, 2000,
yeah.
Was it? How close did you live to him at the time?
Well, we lived in Austin, which is pretty far away. It's a full day's trip. It's about almost 400 miles. And my mom and brother still lived, in Lubbock with my dad. They were like 24-hour caregivers for him all that couple of years. And my sister also lived in Lubbock, although not... She and her husband were a few blocks away. So they all got the the brunt of it. You know, they got we drove down there as often as we could.
I'm going to ask you another song. The song is Peace in the Valley. What did this song mean to your father? All the songs on your new CD are songs he loved.
There was a funny story behind this one because this isn't the type of music that I really associate with my dad. He loved honky-tonk music and, you know, just dance music. And he was a very, very spiritual person. But as far as the music went, he wasn't particularly interested in gospel or any of that music. But at the very last, there came this point one day when my daughter, Elise, who spent a lot of time with my dad in the very last, she asked him one day, "Granddaddy, what is your favorite song?" Because, everybody knows, it's part of the thing around him that music is his main interest. And she said that she thought he was going to say something like, Walking the Floor, one of those, or a Marty Robbins song or something. But she said he just kind of got real quiet, and he said, "Let me think about that a little bit," which surprised her. Bear in mind, all this, he's in bed, completely paralyzed. So she'd probably gone about and done something of the day, and then she went back and would just be with him, just sit with him, sometimes for hours on end. All of us would do that. But he said, "I've been thinking about it," and he said, and she said he said this with a kind of a little, like a grin, a kind of a twinkle in his eye, and he said, "I guess now my favorite song is probably Peace in the Valley." So there was a little touch of my dad's humor there. She really couldn't tell if he was kidding her or not. But the song itself, when I decided to try it, I think Joe Ely suggested it after hearing that story. I thought, well, I can't do that. I don't know how to sing that music. And when I did it, Elvis Presley had done a very beautiful version of it, and I think it was back there in my subconscious someplace.
Well, whether your father was kidding or not, I'm awfully glad you did this song on the CD, and I'm going to ask you to perform it for us now. I love the way you do it.
I'll try it. Well, I'm tired and so weary, but I must go along till the Lord comes and calls me away, where the morning's so bright and the Lamb is the light and the night is as fair as the day. There will be peace in the valley for me someday. There will be peace in the valley for me. Oh, I pray there'll be no sorrow, no sadness, no trouble I'll see. There will be peace in the valley. Well, the bear will be gentle, and the wolf will be tame, and the lion will lay down by the lamb, and the beast from the wild will be led by a little child, and I'll be changed from this creature that I am. There will be peace in the valley for me someday. There will be peace in the valley for me. Oh, Lord, I pray there'll be no sorrow, no sadness, no trouble I'll see. There will be peace in the valley.
I'm going to ask you to play a song that I really love, and know it through you, through a tribute record to Billy Joe Shaver. And Billy Joe Shaver is a Texas songwriter and singer, and you know him. You're a friend of his, and you participated in a tribute concert that ended up on a tribute CD. And when Billy Joe Shaver was on our show, we played your version of this song. The song is called "Hearts of Boston," and Billy Joe Shaver wrote it for his wife. Although it's a song about a wife's death, she was still alive when he wrote it. And I think, as I recall, he didn't even tell her about the song.
Yeah, he said he never got around to playing it for her.
So what do you think we should know about the song in order to fully get it?
Okay, first of all, the Hearts of Boston is a type of flower. These flowers bloom apparently at one time during the year. I guess it's just on a certain day. And somehow also there's a tribe of Indians that would return to an annual meeting ground, I guess, there. And he said his wife would always know when that was, and they would go there. And I don't know if they met with the Indians or what. It's almost like a dreamlike kind of image in the song. And it just, to me, the song itself just somehow evokes a feeling out of Billy Joe that kind of epitomizes how I feel about him. He's just so sweet and wonderful and kind of strong at the same time. You know, he's got that kind of that West Texas macho thing along with a soft heart.
So, Jimmy, before you play Hearts of Boston, I want to mention that your son, Colin Gilmore, is going to accompany you on guitar and vocal harmonies on this one. And he's been performing with you on tour and opening for you as well.
That's right. Okay. He opens the show and then does about half of the set with Rob and I.
Okay.
Hearts of Boston grew down by the river that flows by the old paper mill. In the springtime we stood there together at the top of the old stone fort hill. Many's the time I've been lonesome since you left. I don't know what to do. Like a flower that grows on the hillside, my heart's a bustin' for you. Heart's a bustin' is a beautiful flower that looks like hearts burst inside. I miss you so much, your sweet, gentle touch. I'll love you till the day that I die. One day in a year when the time's right, the Indians flow round the bend. I don't know when I'll go, but somehow I know someday I'll be with you again. Hearts of Boston grew down by the river that flows by the old paper mill. In the springtime we stood there together at the top of the old stone fort hill.
Jimmy Dale Gilmore singing in our studio in 2005 after the release of his album of classic country songs, Come On Back. Country Music Week continues in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As part of our country music series, we're going to feature a 2008 interview with perhaps the greatest living jazz bassist of our time, Charlie Hayden. He's famous, among other things, for his role in helping start a jazz revolution in the late 1950s with the Ornette Coleman Quartet. So what's he doing on Country Music Week? Well, he grew up in a country music family, singing on their radio show. In 2008, he released an album called Ramblin' Boy that returned to his country music roots and to the tradition of singing with family. It featured his three daughters, their triplets, his son, his wife, as well as friends. Charlie Hayden was born in Shenandoah, Iowa in 1937, and 2 years later started singing with his family on their country music radio show. His CD, Ramblin' Boy, features a recording of him singing on the show at the age of two. Here's Charlie Hayden's father introducing Little Cowboy Charlie.
Honey, say good morning to all the little boys and girls. Say hello, all you little boys and girls. Say, I'm just fine. Just fine. And say, I've got a brand new song to sing for you this morning. This morning. There you are. All right. Little Charlie has had so many, many requests to sing that dandy little song, Row Us Over the Tide, and then Mama's going to take him out and get his big bottle of soda pop. So you sing real loud and nice here, and a nice yodel. All right.
Charlie Hayden, welcome to Fresh Air. Charlie, that is just about the most adorable thing I've ever heard, especially the yodel. Charlie, would you share one of your favorite memories of your family's country radio show from when you were, you know, a child?
Every day was like a great experience for me. I just loved it. When we were in Shenandoah, we were there until I was four, and then we moved to Springfield, Missouri. My dad got a farm near my grandmother's, near his mother's place, and we did our radio show from the farmhouse. And my brothers and sisters would go out and do the chores, milk the cows, and come in, have breakfast, and my dad would crank the phone on the wall to let the engineer in Springfield know that we were ready to go on the air. And we'd do the show, and every day was like a wonder to me. You know, I just loved it. And then we moved to Springfield and we did all the shows from KWTO Studios, which was, I loved that so much. I couldn't wait to get there. The double glass windows and the acoustic tile and the air conditioning and all the entertainers and, you know, that I met. And, you know, then the people from Nashville started coming into Springfield to do this network radio show similar to the Grand Ole Opry called Corns a Crackin'. And then, you know, Mother Maybelle and the Carter sisters were coming into Springfield and coming over and visiting my mother. And I got, you know, I was a little kid and Mother Maybelle was singing all these great songs in our living room. And I was just thrilled.
You grew up, you know, singing in a family act. And I'm sure, like, your parents told you what to sing on stage. Now, managing, you know, like putting this record together that features your whole family, your four children, your wife Ruth, what were some of the differences between being, you know, like the kid in the band, the kid in the family band, and now being like the father in the family band?
As I was growing up, I became more and more a part of the family. Preparations for the radio shows, we did two radio shows every day. And then later on, at the end of before my dad got out of the business, we had a television show in Omaha, Nebraska. That's when TV came in. And so I became more and more a part of that as far as the production of the show and choosing the material and what songs we were going to do and what songs we wanted to learn. You know, my brothers and sisters, especially Jimmy, my brother, who was 5 years older than I, he was a big part of, you know, the repertoire and what we were going to do. And I was very influenced by him and his love of jazz. And that's when I started listening to jazz, when I was just a little kid. With my family, it was like I wanted to make sure that they were all happy and that they really wanted to do this, and they all did want to do it. And, of course, I hadn't done any country music since I was 15, and I was, you know, a little bit apprehensive and a little bit nervous about whether I could really pull this off. You know, I'm a jazz musician for 50 years, so the first rehearsal we had over at the house with Ruth and the kids, and I was, you know, blown over about how great they were. I mean, they all sang with such great intonation. I played all these Stanley Brothers songs for them and the Carter Family songs and Jimmy Martin, and they just, you know, took to it as if they'd been doing it every day, you know, the girls and Josh.
My guest is jazz bass player and composer Charlie Hayden. Here's a track featuring his triplet daughters, Tanya, Rachel, and Petra, who have each had careers in indie rock. They'll be with us in a minute. Single Girl, Married Girl, from the new Charlie Hayden Family and Friends CD, Rambling Boy. And my guests are the three singers who we just heard, triplets Petra, Rachel, and Tanya Hayden. Welcome, all of you, to Fresh Air. Your father, Charlie Hayden, is in the studio with us as well. What beautiful voices you have, and what great harmonies. Did you grow up singing harmonies like that with each other?
Yes, we did.
And what about the song we just heard? How did you start singing it? It sounds like you've been singing it a long time.
I played a Carter Family record for them one day, and they just loved it, you know. And then I left the room. They took it from there.
You know, it's amazing that you all have such great voices. And, of course, you grew up in such a musical family. What were you exposed to musically of your father's music, either, you know, his performances on record, concert, or just him playing, or practicing around the house?
I remember listening to whatever our dad was listening to. There was always something playing musically, and a lot of jazz, of course.
Classical music and jazz.
But I remember always sitting in our dad's lap, and he would have big, huge headphones on, and I remember like tapping him and trying to talk to him, and he'd say, "Just a minute." Because he's listening to something. I'm like, "Oh boy." But there was always music playing.
Now, would you mind if I asked you three to just sing something a cappella briefly, just to show us where your harmonies fit with each other? Just a few bars, just like maybe you could kind of chime in one at a time just to hear where all three voices, how all three voices connect.
Well, you sing
it's
Voice from On High. And,
I hear and, a voice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do that one.
Okay, you start it, Petra. I hear a voice calling. It must be our Lord. It's coming from heaven on high. I hear a voice calling.
I've gained
the reward in the land where we never shall die.
Oh, that's so great. Do you trade off who sings high and who sings low and who sings in the middle? Do you have similar ranges in your voices?
We trade a lot. Rachel likes to sing the pretty melody part, so a lot of times I get scooted to the bottom without really knowing it.
What was your reaction when your father proposed this CD to you of a family album of country songs?
Finally. Yeah, we said, about time, let's do it.
Charlie, the last track on your CD is you singing. And people who have followed your career know that although you sang as a boy with your family on their country music radio show, polio affected your voice and your vocal cords and stopped you from singing. But a few years ago, you recorded a track again, Wayfair and Stranger, and you sing again on the final track on this CD. And the song is Shenandoah, which is also the name of the place where you were born. This kind of tears me up every time I hear it. Tell me why you chose this song as the one that you would sing on the CD and what the song means to you.
It means a tribute to my parents who were traveling around the United States before I was born, auditioning on all the big radio stations with my brothers and sister. And they were on their way to Des Moines, Iowa to do an audition, and there was a blizzard, and they stopped in Shenandoah at a motel. And while we were there, my dad went over to the radio station in Shenandoah and auditioned and got the job. And they stayed in Shenandoah for 4 years, and that's where I was born. And that's where I started singing with them. And the two rare times I've sung since, you know, I've been in contemporary music is The Wayfair and Stranger, which was with Quartet West and Shirley Horn and strings, and then this time, and they were both a tribute to my parents. I don't sing these songs as a singer. I sing it in tribute and thanking my mom and dad for making this music and creating this music and my being a part of it and it being inside my soul. And I want to thank them, you know, whenever I can thank them. And this is the way that I can thank them, because I know they hear this. They hear this, so.
You know, I always say that you're the most melodic and emotional bass player I've ever heard. And I think that that must have something to do with the fact that you grew up with this, that you grew up with melody and harmony and songs about life and death and love and loss. I mean, that's just, it's so deep inside of you.
Yes, the music, you know, both of the indigenous art forms and music that come to the United States, you know, hillbilly music and folk music came over from England and Scotland and Ireland into the Appalachian Mountains and the Ozark Mountains where I was raised. And then my attraction to jazz was, of course, the struggle of the African slave and the Underground Railroad, the music that evolved from that struggle. And it seems like, you know, beautiful music, if it's from the United States or wherever it is, it can be from Bulgaria, it can be from Spain, it comes from a struggle, you know, of a people either in poverty or trying to a struggle for freedom, and so this music is very, very melodic. It's filled with wonderful chords and voicings and harmonies, and I grew up with these harmonies, and I'm so lucky because this was my early musical education, and I feel very fortunate.
Just one more thing about your singing. I know there's a long period when you physically couldn't sing because of the polio that you got when you were young. When you sing now, what does it feel like physically to sing?
It's very difficult for me because intonation is one of the priorities in my life, is to play the music in tune, and I don't use my voice every day the way a lot of singers do, you know, who are professional singers. When I did The Wayfaring Stranger, I hadn't sung in 40 years or whatever, you know, since I was 15. And and I didn't practice, you know. And so I got in the studio and just sang. And it was, I think I did one take or maybe two. And on Shenandoah, I was kind of nervous because I wanted to be in tune, and then I started thinking, you know, I'm doing this for Mom and Dad. I'm not doing this, you know, to be a great singer. I just want to do this, and so I just relaxed and did it. But
well, I find it incredibly moving, and I'm so glad that you sang it. So let's hear Charlie Hayden singing Shenandoah from his new CD, Charlie Hayden, Family and Friends. And Charlie, it's just been great to have you back on the show and to talk with your family. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Terry, so much for inviting us.
Oh, Shenandoah, I long to see you away.
Charlie Hayden from his 2008 album Rambling Boy, which returned to his country music roots. Our interview was recorded in 2008. Hayden has a new CD of duets with pianist Keith Jarrett called Jasmine. One of American popular music's great unknowns is what would have happened to Patsy Cline's career if it had lasted longer. She was poised to revolutionize the role of the solo female singer, as well as Nashville's place in the music business. With the release of her complete Decca recordings, rock historian Ed Ward takes a look at a great talent.
Have you ever been lonely? Have you ever been blue? Have you ever loved someone just as I love you? Can't you see that I'm sorry?
Patsy Cline's career really only lasted 3 years. And the complete recorded output from that career lasts 2 hours and 10 minutes, but her importance is out of proportion to those numbers. She was born Virginia Patterson Hensley in 1932 to parents living in the hills of West Virginia and was performing as a teenager under the name Ginny Hensley. In 1953, she married Gerald Cline, a construction worker. A year later, she signed a contract with 4-Star Records, which was mostly a vehicle for recording songs from its owner's publishing house. 4-Star put out 18 songs of the 51 she cut for them, and only one charted.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you.
This recording is actually a remake of the original, which, like all her other 4-Star records, was hardcore country. These recordings were made at the famous Nashville studio, Bradley's Barn, where Decca's country recordings were made. The minute her 4-Star contract expired in 1960, she signed with Decca, and Bradley saw a chance to record a great pop talent. For her first record, he found a song by Hank Cochran and Harlan Howard, two of the best writers in town.
I fall to pieces each time I see you again.
Instrumentation, which included steel guitar by Ben Keith, who later worked with Neil Young, was country, but her phrasing definitely wasn't. The song shot to number one on the country charts early in 1961 and got to number 12 on the pop charts. Bradley's intuition was correct, so he started looking for jazzier numbers from his songwriting acquaintances. A young Texan friend of Cochran's came up with one, and this did even better.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry.
Until Crazy hit number one in the country charts and number nine on the pop charts, Willie Nelson was considered a bit too eccentric for Nashville's tastes, but the song established him and his career took off. Patsy, though, was faced with a problem. She'd joined the Grand Ole Opry and seems to have been a bit freaked out by her pop success. She'd originally resisted recording Crazy, and yet her renditions of Hank Williams and Bob Wills songs sound odd because the way she sings them is so pop. She found herself performing at Carnegie Hall and co-headlining the Hollywood Bowl with Johnny Cash. In 1962, she became the first female country performer to headline in Las Vegas.
I've been so wrong for so long. Thought I could live without the love that you give. I was wrong. Oh, so wrong. I have been so wrong.
By the time So Wrong, co-written by Carl Perkins, hit the charts in the summer of 1962, she'd earned enough money to buy a nice house for herself, her husband Charlie Dick, and her two kids, and her manager Randy Hughes bought a small plane so she could get around quicker and spend more time at home. Clearly, a change was coming. In March 1963, even though Patsy had the flu, they flew to Kansas City to do a benefit with a half dozen other country stars for the family of DJ Cactus Jack Call, who just died in an automobile accident. After the show, she and two of the other performers, Cowboy Copas and Hawkshaw Hawkins, got in the plane, although Dottie West offered to drive her home. "Don't worry about me, Hoss," she told West. "When it's my time to go, it's my time." The plane was delayed a day by bad weather, then only made it as far as Dyersburg, Tennessee. Late the next day, they took off, ran into bad weather, and minutes later crashed into a hill, all on board were killed. Patsy Cline's last sessions show a woman coming to terms with pop music, as well as a voice that was learning to navigate some tricky directions. She never had the chance to make the leap all the way, and left behind 41 songs that still hold up.
Ed Ward lives in the south of France. He reviewed Patsy Cline, Sweet Dream, the complete Decca Studio Masters, 1960 to 1963. Our Country Music Week continues tomorrow. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.